The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
On the 8th of February, voters will be going to the polls in a by-election to choose a successor to Lloyd Russell Moyle, who finally stood down as a city councillor at the end of last year, following success in the 2017 snap general election, when he was successfully elected to serve as a Member of Parliament for Kemp Town. There are four candidates fighting for the right to represent the East Brighton ward on the City Council, so I caught up with them to ask why voters should put their trust in them. With me now is Ed Baker, the Green Party candidate for the East Brighton by-election. Ed, what are the reasons why voters in East Brighton should vote for you?
Well, East Brighton, my local community, I live here. We are an area that has been sadly neglected by the Labour Party, who run the City Council. This area is feeling really sharply the impacts of Tory austerity, and I simply feel that Labour are not doing enough to push back against these effects.
That's quite surprising, because we've got the Leader and the Deputy Leader and the MP representing East Brighton at the moment. You would expect the picture to be a bit more rosy and in the ward, but you're saying that's not the case.
I am saying that's not the case, and the reasons for that, perhaps we'd better ask them, but it's very true that we have the Leader, the Deputy Leader, and now the MP representing East Brighton, and yet still it's the most deprived area of the city. Now, charitably, perhaps Warren Morgan and Jill Mitchell, Leader and Co-Leader respectively, are too busy to listen to the residents of East Brighton, but that's not the case with me. I live here, the residents here will be my priority, and that's why I'm standing.
Okay, what are the real issues that you're finding on the doorstep and the ones that you think voters should trust the Greens to deliver on?
So one of the main ones that keeps coming up on the doorstep time and time again is our housing crisis. Now, everybody can't have failed to have noticed the crisis we have of homelessness in this city, but also just the simple lack of affordable housing. Now, the housing market is simply broken in Brighton. The council is the only source of affordable rented housing, of social housing, that can provide affordable accommodation for people. We need to make sure that we are not only building more houses, but we are buying back the housing stock that's been lost through Right to Buy, and making sure that these are all set at affordable rents linked to a living wage so that people can truly afford them.
Okay, I mean, the Labour administration have got claiming they've got 500 houses in the pipeline. Some of those were legacy developments from the previous administration, and they've done a deal with Hyde Housing Association, which they claim will deliver 1,000 houses in the future. Would you not acknowledge that they've done a good job there?
Well, yes. It's always welcome that new houses are being built, but we have to remember that at least 250 of those houses were started under a Green administration. But despite the fact that we have more houses on the way, it's that key affordability point. You can have as many houses as you like. If no one can afford them, then we're not resolving the issue. It's pressure from the Green Party that has meant that more money is being made available to buy back lost stock through a Right to Buy and make the rents of these new houses affordable.
Okay, Ed Baker, thank you very much for coming into the studio. We watch with interest for the results on the 8th of February.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
With me now is Ed Wilson. You're the Conservative candidate for the East Brighton by-election. So tell us why voters should put their cross against your name in the election on the 8th of February.
I think they should vote for compassionate conservatism instead of complacent Labour. Labour clearly aren't listening to the voices of those in East Brighton, nor are they listening to the voices in the whole city. You look at the affordable housing they're doing, and it's not affordable. You look at Findon Road is not affordable. You've got houses, flats going for about £300,000 in an area where people are on minimum wage, they're on benefits, they're struggling. No one is going to be able to buy a house for £300,000 if they're not earning nowhere near as much.
Okay, let me just probe you. A compassionate conservative, it sounds like an interesting soundbite. It indicates that there must be some very
well, non-compassionate conservatives around. Do you think you suffer from that image that the Conservative Party isn't compassionate? The reason why you're using that adjective to describe yourself?
Well, I really want to show that I'm actually compassionate in the sense that.
Yeah, but we've heard that. Yeah, but what about?
Used the word, haven't you? If you're going to try and describe it, I mean, you can't go around dance around it.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to find out from you whether you think the reason you've got to use that word is that many people perceive the Conservatives as not very compassionate.
I don't think that at all, and I think that what I want to do, I want to stand out, and I want people to, when they vote for me, they should think compassionate. They should think, you know, care about the community. I care about every person's individual needs. I don't care that people have different opinions to me. I don't care if they do not like me as a person. But if I get to be elected, I want to represent everyone. I don't mind who you are. You can give me all the abuse you want, but I'm going to care about your individual needs. And you can be someone who may agree with me, and I want you to be there and know that if you want to send me an email, if you want to call me when I go through the community, you should know that you can speak to me. I'm going to be there for you. And that's what I want to show. It's that I am compassionate. I care about your issues. It doesn't matter if you're a supporter or you're someone who opposes me. I'm here to listen to the community.
Okay. Just a couple of big issues in the ward. The White Hawk Inn, you came onto Latest TV and we didn't have a chance to talk about White Hawk Inn. What's your take on the future of White Hawk Inn?
You know where it's going at the moment, and it's not looking very positive for them, and that's upsetting, because places like this are places where communities meet, and when they're closing down, it's worrying because the community dies and you lose something that's fundamental to the area. I'd hope that if I was elected that I could fight for it and hopefully keep it there, because it's fundamental. These are community areas which the community wants, and if the community wants it, then I, hopefully as a representative, will fight for that, because I will listen to you.
Well, the good news is that Brighton Housing Trust, that has taken it on, have found another £35,000 out of their coffers, and that'll keep it going till September. If you're elected, there's a budget, a full budget council meeting. Will you be voting to take money from the HRA, the Housing Revenue Account, to support the White Hawk Inn?
I'll do whatever I can to fight for White Hawk Inn. I mean, Ed Baker talks about it as a local resident. I mean, he's not going to vote for me because he's the Green candidate, but I would say that I'm going to fight for you, and hopefully if I do get elected, I will still listen to your opinions, and I will fight for White Hawk Inn, because it is fundamental. And if local residents are talking about it, I'm here to listen to you.
Well, what's the Conservative Party's view on zero-hours contracts?
So zero-hour contracts is something that we support, but I do think that people shouldn't be using them for full-time employment. And you're seeing people use them as full-time employment, and that's upsetting. The great thing about zero-hour contracts is that students benefit quite a lot, because they can work when they need to work, when in the city. However, you're seeing more and more people use them for a source of income. And if you don't know if you're working tomorrow, if you don't know if you're working next week, it's going to be upsetting. One week you'll be working 60 hours, one week you might not be working any at all.
Do you think they should be banned by employers such as Brighton Hove City Council?
The council, I think so, unless there's suitable, unless they make a very valid argument. But for me, I think in the council, you should be giving people who work for the council full-time employment. You should be giving, not full-time employment, but permanent employment. They know their hours and they can be relied on the council. Because if you can't rely on the council, then, I mean, it says it all, doesn't it?
Well, does it surprise you to learn that 1 in 6 employees of the local council actually are on zero-hours contracts?
That's surprising.
That really 600 people.
That's surprising. That really does surprise me that so many people are on these contracts. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do think they're beneficial. Like I say, small-time employers and people, students, they do benefit a certain part of our community. But when people are having to rely on them to pay their household bills, if I'm elected in East Brighton, it's an area where people are working multiple jobs to get by. I mean, that's upsetting, and hopefully make some of these zero-hour contracts permanent employment, so that people know they're getting money and food on the table rather than worrying. Yeah.
If you get elected, there'll be a budget, as we've discussed, which you'll have a vote on. At the moment, the proposals suggest that between 80 and 90 people will lose their jobs, and analysis of the figures presented at a recent PNR meeting suggests that some of those will be compulsory. Do you feel that the Conservative government has any part to play in those redundancies and those jobs disappearing?
I would say now that if I do get elected, I won't take any of the money that the council give me. Because if other people are suffering, I'm here to represent. People who represent the council should do it because they love the community, they want to make improvements. I'm not here to collect any money. So I will not take any of the money the council give me. I believe it's around £10,000 each councillor gets. And they get more depending on their status. I know Warren Morgan gets £40,000 as an allowance. That is an allowance, but it does come into your bank account. And I will not take any at all to lay out that I'm here to represent. And I think that's a very firm policy to be made. I'm not in a position where I have a lot of money, but I want to know that when people run for council, they should do it because they want to help the community, not to fill their pockets.
Okay, well, final question, since you've said that. If you don't want to take your £10,000 allowance, would you donate it to the White Hawk Inn if you're elected?
I would happily do so if that's what my constituents want.
Ed Wilson, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
With me now is George Taylor, the Liberal Democrat candidate for the by-election on the 8th of February. So tell listeners why they should vote for you.
Well, I believe you should vote for me due to my age. I'm only 18. I've got very good youth, new ideas, bring a new point of view and everything. I will be the only Lib Dem. I won't have a whip. I will be there solidly for the people of East Brighton. And that will be my main aims.
Aren't you going to be stretched if you're the only Lib Dem in the village and there are lots of committees that you need to belong to stand a chance of influencing affairs? Do you think you're going to be hugely stretched and without background support?
Well, I'll have the support of my team. The Lib Dems are 100% behind me, and I'll be able to work with them. And I believe I have the enthusiasm, I have the passion for politics to get to every place that I'm meant to be.
Okay, well, I mean, that's optimistic. The other political parties have political assistants who work full-time and paid for by the council. It would be a bit unfair, you won't have that. So do you think you might have limited influence in reality?
Well, I guess, of course you're going to have to say that because I would be the only one, but I will be making a massive noise in the council. I will be there shouting, are we getting the voices of East Brighton residents out in the council that has been missed for many years?
Okay, what are the key issues in the ward as far as you're concerned and the Liberal Democrats are concerned?
So from knocking on doors, it's been housing, homelessness and recycling.
Okay, and homelessness, what's the Lib Dem solution for that?
I believe we have to work with all the other people, we have to work with all the upcoming community projects, and we have to work and to find shelters that can be open around in the ward and around the city for all year round, because you never know the weather, and so people have that support there that they need.
Isn't the long-term solution just to build more houses and flats?
Well, of course, that's the simple solution, and while we do work to build more around the city, I think we do have to look at first getting people's lives together, finding out why they ended up on the streets and make sure they don't end up on there again.
Well, just away from people who are rough sleeping, but there are about, the figures have been massaged, but there are around 15,000 to 20,000 people on the housing waiting list. How are you going to deal with them as a Liberal Democrat councillor?
Well, we're going to look to build more homes, of course. That's the best way to do this. And make sure they're affordable, with affordable rents, to make sure in the city and in East Brighton, where rents and prices are skyrocketing, we need to find a way to talk to people and to make sure that the rents and prices are lowered for people who were born in the area and deserve to live there, anyone who wants to live there.
So what about people coming into the city who are looking for work and future opportunities? Do you think they should be kept out and housing prioritised to residents?
No, of course people should be coming down from everywhere. Brighton is an attractive place. I believe, of course, if you've been here as a resident, you should get a little bit of priority, but everyone deserves to have come down to Brighton and enjoy the beautiful.
But priority given to local residents on the housing waiting list?
I think that should happen, yes.
George Taylor, Liberal Democrat candidate in the East Brighton by-election, thank you very much for coming into the studio to talk to me.
Thank you very much, Geoffrey.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Okay, with me now is Nancy Platts, who is an election junkie. This is her third. She's now standing as the Labour Party candidate for East Brighton, having chanced her arm in two general elections. And I guess, Nancy, this was one of the patches that you were gunning for in a general election, so a lot of people will know you already.
Yep, I've got a huge affection for East Brighton. It was in the patch that I stood in as part of the Brighton Kemp Town constituency. So I've met lots of the people before and I know lots of the issues that were around.
And what are the key issues on the doorstep in East Brighton, which is, I have to say, one of the most deprived wards in the whole of the city?
Well, I was walking around the streets of East Brighton around Whitehawk, around the Bird Blocks, for those who know that area. And I stopped to chat to people at the bus stops, and they were very concerned that the night buses were being stopped, particularly people on low incomes, people who worked shifts were really concerned that they weren't going to be able to get home in the evening. So that was one issue. People are always concerned about jobs. People are struggling to find jobs. So the redevelopment of the Black Rock area, I think, is going to help a lot of people when that gets going. And GPs as well. We're down to one GP surgery in East Brighton. There's a couple of satellite offices, but people are telling me they're finding it really difficult to get an appointment with a general practitioner.
And in terms of housing, we know that the old Whitehawk library site is being developed, and Robert Lodge. Which other developments are going on in the ward?
Well, there's some proposals to build another block of flats behind the Bird Blocks in the north of Whitehawk. So that will deliver probably around 1,000 homes in the city. So we've got 500 council homes. Then on top of that, we're building another 1,000 homes. And our aim is to end homelessness in the city and make sure that everybody has a home.
But we've got it's a bit difficult to know how many people are on the housing waiting list, because the figures have been, I won't say massaged, but they've been... The criteria has changed. How many people are actually on the waiting lists in Brighton and Hove at the moment?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know exactly how many people are on the waiting list at the moment. But one of my concerns is the amount of people that are also living in emergency accommodation, the sort of hidden homelessness figure. I'm concerned we've got people sleeping on the beaches and in our parks. So what I want to do is tackle homelessness and make sure that everybody's got somewhere to live.
I mean, I asked the other candidates about... controlling private landlords and rent controls. What's the Labour Party take on that?
Well, one of the things we've done is to bring in a register. So we are trying to register landlords and houses of multiple occupation. We've done a lot of work around trying to improve the standard of accommodation. So one of the things that we'll be bringing in is that people can no longer use, say, a conservatory as a living room or as a bedroom. So we're trying to improve the standard of accommodation. And I'm very interested in working with a lot of the community groups like Acorn to see what ideas we can find from them, to get in touch with all of the people that are living in rented accommodation and see if they feel that there's anything else that we can do. And I will certainly be very committed to tackling the very poor standard of some rented accommodation that we've got in Brighton.
Now, if you do get elected on the 8th of February, it'll be in time for the annual set piece when the budget is set. Now, the outline proposals had originally about 80 or 90 jobs going. Now, whether those are voluntary, I suspect there might well be now voluntary redundancies. Those are nevertheless people's jobs. How do you deliver services with a reducing budget? What's the smart way that Labour has come up with squaring the budget?
Now, it's always problematic. You know, we've got huge cuts. We've had something like 40% of the budget cut by the Conservative government. The smart way is to get the Conservative government out, is to vote them out of the next election so that we can actually have decent budgets so that local government can operate good services for local people. You know, that's where my heart is. You know, we don't want any job losses. There's not going to be any compulsory redundancies. What I will be doing is talking to other councillors and the trade unions so that we work constructively with trade unions and representatives of the staff to ensure that nobody loses their job and that any jobs that go through a process of retirement, and that people who are facing losing their jobs are offered a job somewhere else.
I can't sort of talk about the budget without asking about the increases in council tax, because real terms wages haven't really gone up for many years, and there are many people who are just about surviving. But in the last, if the increase goes up with the generosity of the government's extra 1%, in the last 3 years, council tax would have gone up about 15%. Mm-hmm. How are some of the people living in Whitehawk and the rest of East Brighton going to be able to afford to pay such a large increase in this coming financial year?
Well, it's a challenge, isn't it? And you know, it's one of the issues I raised when the Green Council wanted to have a referendum, was whether or not that was going to be affordable for people. And it's something we've got to look at, whether or not there are people who can pay a lower rate, can get some kind of subsidy. You know, we've got to look at whether everyone's paying their council tax up to date, and take as many measures as we can to get money into council so we can provide essential services. But essentially, what I want to be doing is to be lobbying the government to say they've got to properly fund local authorities so we can provide essential services for people.
And on that hopeful note, we end this interview, but thank you very much. I hope if you are elected, you might come back and do a more extended interview for Radio Rebirth.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Now, as you've heard, one of the common themes with all the interviews from the East Brighton by-election candidates is the future of Whitehawk Inn, which is firmly ensconced in the centre of the ward. So I thought it would be good just to go to the source to find out something about its future. And with me now is Andy Winter from Brighton Housing Trust. Andy, what is exactly going on with the future of the Whitehawk Inn?
Well, the Whitehawk Inn has provided some amazing services to the people of East Brighton for many, many years, since before it was part of Brighton Housing Trust. It joined BHT about 3 years ago when its future was, at that stage, uncertain. Sadly, our big lottery funding is coming to an end. And that with the erosion of the value of other grants, and also the fact that a number of other organisations deliver services within the Whitehawk Inn, but they don't pay their way. It costs us money for them to be able to deliver their services in the Whitehawk Inn. We've really struggling to see a viable future for the Whitehawk Inn.
Is this, though, a failure of BHT to actually fundraise specifically for the services delivered in Whitehawk Inn? Have you just relied too much on the lottery funding?
I think it's austerity and the impact. Usually the real impact of austerity happens about 3, 4, 5 years after the announcement. So cuts in local government, changing priorities of organisations like the big lottery. And the one thing that BHT is responsible for is our size. In the past, when the Whitehawk Inn was a standalone organisation, it could apply for a lot of charitable trust funding. And we knew when we took it on, our turnover as an organisation excluded us from applying for these trust funds. So as far as that is concerned, yes, it's BHT's fault. We have tried, we have looked at so many different options, but it's a really difficult environment out there for organisations like BHT, and there's no funding for adult education services like this. It's absolutely crazy. This is something that central government should be making sure happens, especially in the current environment, especially when it comes to things like the introduction of universal credit. People have to learn those basic skills like computer literacy. We provide access to the internet within the Whitehawk Inn. The DWP, national government, should be coming to us saying, please continue what you're doing and please expand. The need is so great. We look at all the indicators of the havoc being wreaked by something like universal credit, where everyone who's moving over, who are paying rents, are seeing their rent arrears increasing. 70% of people in rent arrears now who are on universal credit have never been in rent arrears before. So it's areas, places like the Whitehawk Inn that offer the government a solution, yet they are so reluctant to come forward with funding.
Give us an idea of how many, I suppose you call them clients, people come in, because it's not just Whitehawk, it serves the Bristol estate and further afield. How many people will be affected if the Whitehawk Inn closes?
We have many hundreds of people coming into the Whitehawk Inn every month. It operates as a drop-in, so people don't always have to register, so we don't necessarily know what the footfall is. But we have courses that are run there, and they are almost fully booked. So there's a lot of interest, a lot of reliance on the Whitehawk Inn. What we want to make sure, though, is that there's a future, and our priority is to provide a service for the people of Whitehawk. Some of the people who use it at the moment have coming from elsewhere in Brighton. Our catchment area would include the Bristol Estate, Manor Hill, Whitehawk itself. So we want to prioritise a support service and a drop-in community facility for the people who are living in that area, over and above the people who might come from elsewhere in Brighton and Hove.
Now, my understanding is that the immediate danger of closure has been put on hold. You've managed to dig deep and find some extra funds. But what do you think, where do you think the additional funds? Because I think I've been told that if you carry on the services as they are, it would cost you about 100,000 quid to keep going with the same level of services. So where do you think those extra funds are going to come from?
We're doing a number of things. We are actually reducing our costs, and there will be a reduction in staffing levels over the next few months. So the range of services we provide will be reduced between April and the end of September. BHT is putting some of its own money, showing our commitment to the Whitehawk Inn. So we're putting £35,000 in to make sure that we can carry on operating until the end of September. We're looking to raise another £35,000 to enable us to continue running till the end of March. By that stage, we hope to have secured funding and a remodelling of the service. We've got a number of ideas. We're talking to a number of partners, but I'm not at liberty to actually go into that detail at this stage. But there's some very, very exciting plans, and we are hoping that they will come together, and the Whitehawk Inn, I hope, will have a good future.
Okay, that seems like a glimmer of hope on the horizon, and I won't press you on the other arrangements. In the last minute or so, the other theme that's common to all the candidates has been the rise of rough sleeping and homelessness, and I know that BHT is at the forefront of dealing with this crisis. What do you think? Has the administration done enough to counter this ill that is hitting us now in Brighton and Hove?
I think Brighton and Hove City Council, through successive administrations, has done what it can do, and I won't criticise the efforts of the local authority. This goes to the heart of national policy. And we have this situation now with 178 people sleeping on the streets of Brighton and Hove.
178, that's possibly not the true figure, is it?
No, possibly not. We know women tend to hide, women get into unsafe relationships, etc., etc. So the number is probably higher. That is the official figure. It's a scandal. In one of the richest cities, in one of the richest countries in the world, that people are living on our streets. That's an absolute scandal. The government are bringing together a task force. They say they're going to have addressed this issue by 2027. That is simply not good enough. We need urgent action to make sure that people do not live on the streets, and more importantly, that they do not die on the streets.
Well, yes, so the average age of someone living on the streets for a man is how long?
That's 47, and for a woman it's just 43.
Which is pretty scandalous. Now, you do a lot of work for the people who live on the streets, and you get them off the streets. If they wanted to donate funds and help BHT in this great endeavour, where can they do them? How can they do this?
They can do it online at www.bht.org.uk, or send a cheque to BHT at 144 London Road, Brighton, BN14PH.
Andy Winter, thank you very much indeed.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
So there you have it. You've now heard from all the candidates. The polls open at 7:30 in the morning on Thursday, the 8th of February, and close at 10 o'clock in the evening.
I expect that the result will be announced later the same evening, and I look forward to inviting the newly elected City Councillor for East Brighton onto a future edition of Radio Reverb's Politics Show.